Hello, my name is Chuck Porritt. Welcome to my secondary website and to my webpage titled, Why God Requires Our Faith. In Romans chapter 3, verse 23, the Apostle Paul wrote that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Paul was saying that every member of the human race sinned against God at some time in the past. Paul went on to clarify that statement in Romans chapter 5, verse 12, where he wrote, By one man, Adam, the father of the human race, sin came into the world, and death as a consequence of that sin. And so death passed upon all men, because all sinned. If we are to take Paul's words at face value, we must understand him to say that when Adam sinned in Eden, each and every single member of the human race actually, consciously, individually, and personally sinned with him at the same time and in union with him. In my section of this website on the basics of Christianity, I address some of the questions that come because of Paul's words. In my page on the judgment of God, I talk about how it is possible that we all could sin with Adam. In my page on the forgiveness of God, I talk about God's gracious solution for our sin problem. And in my page on testing Christianity, I talk about how any person can test the claims of the Bible and know for himself or herself whether or not they were truly present in the Garden of Eden long ago. But in this page, I look at the issue of faith and take a close look at the actual commandment that God gave to Adam in the Garden of Eden, and the meaning of that commandment for us today. In Genesis chapter 2, verses 16 and 17, the Bible tells us that when God created Adam, he placed him in the Garden of Eden, and that in that garden there was a unique and special tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God told Adam that he could eat from all of the trees in that garden, except for that one tree. God warned Adam that if he ate the forbidden fruit and learned the difference between right and wrong, he would be committing a sin worthy of death. Now, this does not make sense to us. We ask, how can a person do what's right if they don't know the difference between right and wrong? And yet God was telling Adam that the way of righteousness was not a way of learning right from wrong, but a way of simply trusting God, taking him at his word, and obeying his commandment concerning a particular tree. In the Bible, this believing or trusting God is also called faith in God. The Bible tells us that Adam and his wife Eve were attracted to the forbidden fruit for three reasons. Because the fruit was beautiful to look at, because it was delicious food, and because the fruit contained the power to elevate Adam and Eve in their glory and in their status, to make them more like God. In my video introduction to this entire website, I point out that it is my personal belief that the forbidden tree had many similarities to today's Christmas tree. The Bible tells us that Adam and Eve disobeyed God, even though God had warned them that they would die if they did so. What was it that convinced Adam and Eve that they would not die? Adam and Eve believed, first of all, that the forbidden fruit and the knowledge of right and wrong would enable them to achieve a measure of righteousness on their own. The Bible calls this attempt to achieve righteousness through a knowledge of right and wrong the works of the law, and frequently contrasts this kind of self-righteousness with the righteousness of faith. Secondly, Adam and Eve believed that they would be able to use their knowledge of right and wrong to prevent anybody else from achieving a better righteousness. That if anybody sought to achieve righteousness in another way, they would be able to use their knowledge of right and wrong to tempt that person, to bring about their sin and moral downfall and ultimate condemnation by God. And so for Adam and Eve, the question of righteousness was a question of relativity. Not a matter of submitting to God's definition of righteousness, that of making God submit to man's definitions of righteousness. In order to disobey God, Adam and Eve had to close their minds to everything that they knew about God, His trustworthiness, His goodness, His wisdom. In order to disregard God's words, they in fact had to completely exclude God from their worldview. They had to choose a world in which there is an utter denial that God even exists. In addition, they had to be prepared to wage moral warfare against any and all who might seek to be righteous in God's way rather than their own. This is why in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9, God describes the human heart as being deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. When Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit, they were breaking the most important law of all time, the commandment that we are to love God with all of our heart. If God did not want Adam and Eve to know the difference between right and wrong, then what was His plan? How were Adam and Eve to be righteous people in their everyday relationships with others? Well, rather than pursue the legalistic approach that Adam and Eve had chosen, God had a living and dynamic plan for them. God's plan was that as Adam and Eve continued to believe Him and to respect His word and to obey His commandment concerning the tree, that God, in the person of the Holy Spirit, would enter their bodies and actually live within them. That Adam and Eve would have a chance to experience what the Bible calls the fruits of the Holy Spirit, which are love and joy and peace, patience, kindness, understanding, all of the very positive, gentle, and loving attributes of God. When the devil tempted Eve in the Garden of Eden, he told her that she would become more like God if she learned the difference between right and wrong. And in a sense, that was true. She did learn something that previously had been reserved for God alone. But ultimately, Eve became as different from God as it is possible to become. That is why in Romans chapter 3, verse 23, Paul said, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." Because we come short of God's original plan and His original intention for us, which was that we would actually experience what it's like to be God and experience all of His glorious attributes. That is also why in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4, Peter describes Christians as people who have put behind them their old ways of lust and moral corruption, and have now become partakers of the divine nature. God has set a second tree in the midst of human history through which we can obtain the forgiveness of our past sins and enter into this glorious plan that He had originally intended for us, that God Himself would be our righteousness, that He would make Himself one with us and we would truly know what it's like to be God. Now, for most people, the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden has little or no worth. If you want to propose to people that it's a historically valid story, they consider it dead on arrival. And there are three primary reasons for this. First of all, most people in the world believe that we as human beings have evolved from apes. Even though those apes are still crawling around in jungles and eating insects, and we have decoded our DNA and are sending satellites into deep space, have built nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons that are capable of annihilating every living thing on this planet, yet people insist on believing that the difference between us and the apes is a matter of evolution rather than a reflection of our Creator's hand. This is the essence of the New Age religion of our day. The belief that we can continue to evolve, that we will become more and more divine, and that we will ultimately solve all of our problems as we complete our evolution to spiritual divinity. But our problems lie in the realm of the conscience. And it is here, as I explain in my page on testing Christianity, that a person can truly discover whether or not the biblical story about our origins is correct. Secondly, many Christians have turned the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden into a fairy tale. Many Christians teach that there was no death, no suffering, no negativity in the Garden of Eden, that animals didn't begin to die until Adam ate the forbidden fruit. I don't believe that. I don't believe that when God showed all of the animals to Adam, that Adam saw lions and tigers eating grass, that he saw sharks and killer whales eating seaweed, or that he saw eagles swooping down out of the sky to pounce on fruits and vegetables. When God created Adam and Eve, he brought them into a world that was already in a great moral conflict. Lucifer, the chief of God's archangels, had already led one-third of God's angels in rebellion against him. And Lucifer had access to the Garden of Eden. That was a necessary thing because God wanted us to have the freedom to choose whether or not we would do what is right or what is wrong, with the glorious possibility of living forever as a consequence of believing and obeying our Creator. And so I believe that God allowed Adam and Eve to come into a world where nature was red in tooth and claw, and that when God warned Adam that he would die on the day that he ate the forbidden fruit, Adam knew exactly what God was talking about. Thirdly, people laugh at the idea that a person can eat a piece of fruit and learn the difference between right and wrong for having eaten that fruit. But for thousands of years throughout human history, people have taken plants and plant extracts and have used their hallucinogenic properties to open their eyes to spiritual truths, quote unquote, to take them places and into spiritual realms where they have never been before, to enlighten them, so to speak, and to allow them to make contact with spiritual beings that the Bible refers to as familiar spirits, allies of Satan, who wish to bring about mankind's downfall. These things have always been forbidden by God throughout His Word. Today, here in the United States, some of our leading medical institutions, like Johns Hopkins University, are experimenting with extracts from mushrooms, using their hallucinogenic properties in controlled trials and experiments, to see if they can help people to reset their worldview, dealing with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress syndrome, drug addiction, and in some cases, people who are facing the ends of their lives and having terminal illnesses. This use of drugs to alter one's worldview and to give one a religious access to spiritual things that God has forbidden is called in the Bible sorcery. The original Greek word in the New Testament that is translated sorcery is pharmakeia, from which we get our words pharmacology, pharmacy, and pharmaceuticals. It is the use of drugs and plants and their extracts to allow a person to travel, as it were, in their minds to places they've never been before, and to expose them to alternate versions of reality and of truth. For someone to laugh at the idea that God could have put a tree in the Garden of Eden that would have opened Adam and Eve's eyes and caused them to know the difference between right and wrong is to ignore history and some of the most prevalent practices in human society today.